And it's Monday morning, you know what that means.
I don't really want to do the work today. I don't really want to do the work today. I don't really want to do the work today. I don't want to do the work today.
What? What's this?
Uh-oh. I don't really want to do the work today. I don't really want to do the work today. I don't really want to do the work today. I don't want to do the work today.
We all kind of feel like that. I don't want to do the work today.
Yeah, Monday morning blues, right?
His Honor, the Mayor of Racine, Corey Mason, is with me this morning. Got a lot to talk about this morning. First of all, thanks for coming in. I do appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure.
And my apologies for saying 7:35 when it was 7:05, and that's, I don't know, I should be fired. Anyway, so let's talk about the election, first of all.
Yeah.
Kind of a couple of surprises here. A couple of incumbents out.
Right.
And like three major ones, Corey, Sebastian, Jeff Koe. And Melissa Caprillion, all out. What happened?
So, and four new alders. So Terry McCarthy didn't run for re-election. So we'll have four new alders sworn in, and Mary Land is the one incumbent who will return. So, So it's, you know, it's just a reminder that politics is still very much a retail sort of thing, where you have to knock on doors and talk to voters, and oftentimes the person who puts in the most effort and has the best message winds up winning. So it, you know, I don't think it's anything more than that. I mean, certainly some big surprises, even statewide, right? I mean, the margin with which Crawford won the Supreme Court race, I think, took people.
Now, what happened there? You had Elon Musk spending millions and millions of his own dollars.
Yeah.
Now, people say, well, that's nothing to him. It's something.
It's a lot of money.
It is a lot of money. It's a lot of money to anybody. Yeah. And he lost, and we haven't heard from him since that election.
Right.
So was that just Wisconsin saying you can't buy us?
I think that's certainly the speculation, right? I mean, it'd be good to see some analysis based on, but it's certainly anecdotally you heard people saying, I really don't like this. I really don't like, you know, this billionaire coming in from out of state and trying to direct how we're going to vote in a state Supreme Court race. And so, you know, Susan Crawford, I think, said the day of or the night of the election that, you know, she felt she was running against Elon Musk as much as she was her opponent. So, you know, I think big picture, just stepping back, I mean, just comparing it to the local elections, which is still knocking on doors and talking to voters one at a time. You know, one of the things that's just so hard in this country is just the role that billionaires now play in these elections. I mean, it's not just like it used to be when you ran for office. It's like, well, are the environmental groups supporting you, or the labor union supporting you, or are there local organizations getting behind you? And now more and more you hear people talking about, like, well, which billionaires are getting behind this candidate?
They got George Soros on the left. You got Elon Musk on the right.
And I mean, it would just be, in my opinion, you know, much better if it wasn't about which billionaires can fund us, and, you know, what you can do to raise support within your own community or your own state to move things forward. But I think it's going to continue to get worse before it gets better. I mean, even just this last presidential, there was lots of, well, which billionaires are supporting which candidate? And I was like, my goodness.
You know, I'm a person a lot wiser and smarter than me said, if you have confidence in your candidate, you don't need to spend millions and millions of dollars on them. If you have confidence, they can win. If you don't have confidence, they can win, you better start spending money. And maybe they just have confidence in Brad Schimmel winning. I don't know.
I would not take the argument that if you have confidence in your opponent, you shouldn't spend money on them. Running campaigns does cost money.
I know, but the millions and making it the biggest election in U.S. history. Yeah.
But at $20 million on a state Supreme Court race is just on one side. I mean, that's just sort of unheard of. So,
being in the advertising business here, we were happy this
time. I'm sure it went very well for advertisers. But yeah, so I think that was a bit of a surprise. But for the council, you know, it was a couple of like surprises. But again, I don't think there was anything much more to it than people knocking on the doors and interacting with voters. And then we had the fire referendum passed and the school referendum passed. So that was a good step forward for local public services, making sure that we've got the firefighters we need, so that if you call 911, we can get there to you quickly. Our call volume has certainly increased over the years. So firefighters are being asked to do more and more with the number of calls that they get. And then for the schools, you know, our public schools are critically important to educating our kids. So happy to see the results on both of those.
Now, the people who voted no on those referenda, is it referenda, referendi, or referendums?
As I understand it, referendum is singular, referenda is plural. Okay.
I want to be right here. I want people to look up to me and say, boy, that guy really knows his grammar. All right. So on the referenda, the people who voted no, their reasoning was, I don't want my property taxes going up anymore.
Yeah.
And the people who voted yes said, yeah, but what if my house burns down? Yeah. What if, you know, my kids, I don't want them growing up stupid.
Right.
So I see both points.
Sure. No, absolutely. And look, I mean, there's certainly frustration about, you know, funding local services, whether it's fire departments or schools. You know, the state is sitting on a $4 billion surplus right now. And certainly, I know Democrats in the last legislative assembly or session were saying, you know, maybe it would be good for us to send this money back to these communities so we don't have to keep relying on the property taxes for everything. So that's a legitimate frustration. I mean, people have already paid the taxes once and we're asking them to do more at the local level because they're just sitting on a pile of money in Madison. So I get the frustration, but ultimately that's why it comes down to a referendum, right? Whichever side gets more votes has the day. I mean, we've had referendums in the past that have not passed, right? We had a police referendum a few years ago and it failed. So we weren't able to move forward with those police resources. So, you know, it does come down to what the voter's preference is. And again, you put it on the ballot, you make your best case, and whichever side wins, wins. I mean, Kenosha just had a school referendum in February and it failed, right? So it really just comes down to what the voters want.
Now, is it possible that they don't understand when they read them on the ballot? Because they're written by attorneys, and they're written kind of like, does it mean if I vote yes, yeah, I actually mean no? If I know, I mean yeah. I actually had someone had to explain it to me,
yeah,
and I said, this is what I want. What should I put down, yes or no?
Yeah.
I mean, and I was reading the ballot. Now, I knew what I was going to put down, but I was reading it. It is not self-explanatory.
It's not. And unfortunately, state law requires it to be written that way. And it couldn't be more... I bet they could make it more confusing if they really tried, but it's not
clear. It can always be made more confusing.
It is not clear, right? I mean, you almost like it to say, like, if you're for the schools, if you're for the firefighters, vote yes.
Yeah.
If you're against the firefighters having the positions, or if you're against more money for the schools, vote no. But we write it in this whole convoluted, and you know, you've got to disclose how much money it's going to be so people can see that, but they could certainly write it in a way that's more simple. I think I was in here before and you're just like, just to be clear, so that it's not a double negative.
I think you're the guy I asked.
Yeah. It's not a double negative, right? If I'm voting yes, it's actually yes for the schools, right? So that's the complicating piece of it. So
I had a teacher in college and he purposely wrote the questions like that because he wanted to make sure we read them and comprehended them. And he wrote all these double negatives in there. And by the end, he said, well, what do you think the answer is? I don't know what the question is.
Yeah.
But he did it on purpose to get us to think.
Yeah.
And it was probably a good idea because it did make us think.
And I think it's a good exercise academically. But when you go into the ballot box, it should be clear to people what they're voting on.
So how do we change that?
You have to change state law.
The law say? Make it convoluted?
It certainly seems like it was the intent, but it actually lays out what language you have to use. So, you know, really that whole paragraph that you would vote for the fire referendum, I mean, we can sort of insert like the description of what it's for and, you know, what the dollar amount is. But the structure of that paragraph is driven by the state statutes.
I think I voted the right way. I think I voted the way I wanted to.
That's
because
good.
I think you're the person who told me, if you want this, vote yes. If you want this, vote no.
Right.
Because I didn't understand it. You know what really gets me? Sometimes I'll vote and my wife will tell me as she voted. She basically canceled out my vote and I canceled out hers.
Sure.
That kind of ticks me off.
Well, I mean, you know, but you could say that about your neighbor. You could say that about your brother or your sibling. Or your
canceled parent. Out my vote.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, that's how democracy works.
I did do some write-ins this time.
Nice.
Yeah, and they didn't win.
Rarely do they.
But it's on the record.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's right. You know, I was number 374 when I voted. And I voted at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon at Red Apple School. And I've never seen it that high.
So it was almost, I haven't seen the final numbers, but during the day, it was somewhere between 75-80% of presidential level voting.
Yeah.
Which, you know, does say something about all the money that was spent is we did get more participation than we've typically seen in a spring election. And so for that, I'm happy to see more people participating. It's always better when more people participate in a democracy, even if it doesn't go your way, it is a better thing when more and more people participate.
Yeah. And when I was there, there weren't a lot of people there, but I always thought they could tell how you voted by the number, because when you go in, they give you a little slip of paper with a number on it. And then you got to take the ballot and that number over to the next table.
Yeah.
And they give you, they sign something, they write something. And they said, now, that number, is it correlated to my ballot? Because I always thought it was. And they said, no, there's no way to tell.
Right.
I said, you don't write that number on my ballot? No, I didn't write that number on my ballot.
That's right.
So there's no way to tell. However, I think there is, because when I put the slip in there, I'm number 374.
Right.
The person who took that ballot also took the number, and they know that number is now 374. And so is there a way to tell how
could
I voted?
Could you reverse engineer it? That's a good question. I mean, it's typically not what's done, right? But I guess if somebody said, let's look up that you were number 374 and then tried to look at the file of all the ballots in the box at that point and find the 307. But they don't count them like that when they
know,
the file.
I know.
Right? Like, so that's the... So
why do they even give you a number? Why do you have to hold that number in your hand? I don't get the purpose of that.
It's a double entry, right? So they want to know that that you as a human correlate with the same number of ballots that should be in the box.
I know.
To make sure that they're not falling behind.
And you know what? I don't care if they know how I vote. Yeah. I really don't care.
Well, it is still what they call Australian ballot, where it's a secret ballot. People can't find out how you vote. I mean, I don't know.
Australian?
That's where the tradition comes from. That secret ballot is also known as the Australian ballot. But that's one of the things that's important for democracies. You get to go in that little cubby there and like mark your bubbles in however you see fit. And, you know, it's not like the old days when they used to pull the drape. And
that's right.
Have the lever.
But when I first voted in 1972, my mother, when I was a little kid, used to bring me in there. And she worked for the county. And the county was deeply Republican and she was not. And she always thought they can tell how she voted. That's what she believed.
Yeah.
So she had to vote Republican in that district. And she used to bring me in there because she couldn't bring herself to pull the lever.
Yeah.
And I asked her years later, she goes, I couldn't bring myself to do it.
Wow.
So she made me pull the lever down. Now, a lot of people then used to push the levers back up before they opened the door. And that means your vote didn't count.
Oh, no.
You had to leave the lever down.
Yeah.
And when you opened the curtain, they all popped up, but it counted your ballot. So if you ever put them up and people didn't, your vote never counted.
Yeah.
It's Honor Racine Mayor Corey Mason here. We got a lot to talk about this morning. Let's talk about the Hull Apartments. What's that all about?
Yeah, so over by Regency Mall, the Hull Group bought the mall, and I think as people...
Oh, those are the Hull Apartments.
Yeah. So you might have seen the Woodman's going up where a lot of the mall used to be. It's going to be a huge building, almost a 5-acre building. So it's going to be one of the biggest Woodman's in the state. So people are excited about that going up. But behind the Target there, where the theater used to be years ago, because the Hull Group brought most of the mall property there. They are putting in 260 new apartments right across from Pritchard Park there. So they'll be called the Pritchard Apartments, but really excited to see them break ground on that. So we actually had three developments go through the council last week. So we're excited to see that one moving forward.
Now, was that Racine or Mount Pleasant?
It's in the city of Racine. Yeah.
Because right across the street must be Mount Pleasant, because I lived in some apartments there and I was Mount Pleasant.
Yeah, if you go to the south across the other side of Durand Avenue, Mount Pleasant. If you go to the west, you're also in Mount Pleasant. But if you get right on the corner of 11 and 31 or Durand and Green Bay Road, that's sort of the corner where the Olive Garden is.
Yeah.
That's sort of the corner where the city stops on that side of town.
Did the city lose a lot of tax base when the mall, all the stores went out? Because there were some big stores in there.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So this is like why the redevelopment is so important. We used to have millions of dollars of tax base invested in there. And so when all those stores get empty, and then I won't bore you with the details, but there's something called the dark store comparison. So you would have, property owners like the mall say, well, that Kmart over there is empty and we're not charging them anything. So you shouldn't charge us anything either. And so there was a real effort to drive down property tax revenue from retail. So having something new in there, like some grocery stores and some apartments, really helped stabilize the tax base. And then the part of the mall that remains is about as much retail as the days of sort of having the heydays of the malls are kind of behind us now, just as Amazon and everything becomes where most people get their retail. But there'll still be some retail space in there that we're excited for people to use. But essentially, what are we going to do with that space in the 21st century? Is it going to be like it was in the heyday of the malls in the mid-80s? No, probably not again. But it can be something new and different and provide some much-needed housing in the area and a nice new grocery store. And so we're excited about what that means.
You want to hear something?
Sure.
Elmwood Plaza, when it first opened up, we had the Jim and Carol in here talking about it. They brought some jingles along with them. This was Goldblatt's department store.
Yeah.
And this is before they had malls. It was just the strip malls. And here's the jingle from there.
Everybody's hurrying to Goldblatt's for good old-fashioned savings. It's Goldblatt's fabulous one-day-only sale tomorrow, Thursday. Goldblatt's great low prices on brand-new items, values in every department, with extra late shopping hours to help you save even more. Look at these great values.
Save $7 an Oster 10-speed blender, only $19.99. Colgate toothpaste with an MFP, only 89 cents each. Hurry to Goldblatt's one-day-only sale tomorrow and bring a friend.
That's it. That same Colgate is now like $3.50, $4.50.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
89 cents. And then we
talk a blender for $20. That sounds kind of pricey.
$19.99.
Yeah, yeah, that's not so cheap.
And I'm sure the tax was pretty low then. Yeah, so yeah, Goldblatt's, and then it went up in flames.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, but we also have one for Kresge's. I'll play you later.
All right.
That was became Kmart.
Wow. Yeah. No. It's so I grew up on West Lawn Avenue. So my like early memories were sort of looking over at that Elmwood Plaza and seeing when the JCPenney was there. People might remember that before the mall opened, the JCPenney was in Elmwood Plaza. But yeah, it's a great, great memory.
Times move on.
Yeah, yeah.
Whoever thought, you know, when downtown was king, Elmwood Plaza thought they were going to put downtown out of business. Yeah. Then the mall thought they were going to put Elmwood Plaza and downtown out of business. Yeah. The mall's gone. Elmwood Plaza's still there, but downtown is still vibrant.
Yeah, well, thriving. So another development we did. I mean, so the hotel's there, the Breakwater, the new apartments that are there. But one of the other developments we did last week was the folks who own Hotel Verdant are expanding. They bought the building next door. They're going to put a nice spa, day spa in there for people to enjoy, whether you're a member of the community, you want those services, or if you're staying at the hotel. But then they bought a couple other buildings where they're going to build a new apartment building back where the drive-in bank used to be, and put a really nice new parking lot next to the hotel where they'll put in some electric charging stations and some other things. So it's another really big investment in the downtown.
Who owns that?
It's Dominion Properties is the name of it.
Okay.
But yeah, they're doing well. And
I'm glad they're doing well.
Yeah, yeah, it's great. So well enough that they're ready to expand and do another phase. So we're excited to see more development happening in the downtown. You know, I will say this for the downtown. When people, you know, want sort of an authentic town experience, you can't really recreate what downtown has in terms of that historic district there on Main Street and 6th and 7th. If you want to feel like you're walking down a real place and a real sense of community, people really enjoy that. So I think it's part of why you're seeing our downtown and other downtowns across the country have this sort of renaissance coming back.
I've got Kelly Cruz coming in this week. We're talking about more events coming up downtown.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and they do a great job of doing those events so that people want to come down there.
A lot of work.
It is.
She's got a staff not that big to do it,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, so. She does great work.
Yeah. Don Rosen in the morning. WRJN.
I have a few more minutes with us. Honor the mayor of the city of Racine, Corey Mason. We were talking during the break there. The market's down over 2,000 points as we stand right now. And I said, well, how does that affect the city? You know, it affects everything and everyone. You told me something interesting. I said, because you said the city does not invest in the stock market.
Correct.
But?
Well, if the tariffs go into place, and so say, for example, you know, vehicles cost 25% more to buy now than they did a year ago. Well, you know, we buy vehicles, right? We buy police cars. We buy vehicles, you know, for the water utility and the public works department. If those become more expensive, that's going to have a real impact on taxpayers. We're either, you know, buying fewer of them or asking taxpayers to pay more for them. So it'll indirectly affect everybody at every level.
Anything the city buys.
Exactly.
You guys don't have a pipeline to free stuff.
I wish we did.
Make things easier. Let's talk about a few more topics here. Yeah. The Lincoln King townhouses.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's talk about those.
So the Lincoln King Community Center is going on that empty block that's just to the north of Julian Thomas School on Martin Luther King Drive there. But around that, we're going to put in 32 new townhouses. So you might have noticed some of those houses had been boarded up for some time and not in the best state of repair. So we got in addition to the money we've raised to build the community center, we got a $15 million grant to repair 10 homes and build 40 new ones. So we're going to start to see, in addition to a brand new community center, you're going to see some nice new housing going around it as well.
A lot of housing going up.
We need it. I mean, I'm proud to say that that's your reaction to it, because what we hear from communities across the state is, wow, there's just not enough housing. So we're doing everything we can to create housing opportunities for people who live here.
I was going to put a tent in my backyard at one time. My wife and I were going to try living out in the backyard just a few days during the summer.
Sure.
So we set a little nature camera up in my backyard. It runs on, it just, you set it up there, and it's not infrared, but it really is bright when you see what's going on in the backyard. You don't need that much light. and it's motion. I can't believe the wildlife running around my backyard at night when I'm sleeping. We got possums all over the place, raccoons. We got stray cats putting their face right in the camera lens. There's a lot. I'm not sleeping in my backyard. I don't need a knock on my door from a possum in the middle of the night.
More going on locally than you thought.
Yeah. Wow. Okay, let's also talk about, now this is something I got a memo on from the city. You are looking for, and this is something I didn't know, people to be on boards, committees, and commissions. Just, you don't have to be elected. You just have to apply
for it,
right?
That's right. So we have a number of boards, committees, and commissions. So obviously you can't apply to sit on the city council or to be on one of the council committees because you have to be an elected member of the council to be able to do that. But we do have everything from the Parks Board to the Harbor Commission to the Board of Health to the Civic, the Common Council, the community. Well, you can't apply to the Common Council, but Community Development Authority, our Planning Commission. These all require citizen members. Now, some of the positions require you to have a professional credential to be able to do it. Some of positions require realtors or developers or architects or lawyers. But for the most part, if you have an interest in, say, the Harbor Commission or the Parks Board or some other work that we do, we really need people to participate. It's actually more than 70 citizen appointments that are made to these boards, committees, and commissions. And for it to work, we need city residents to apply. So if you're interested, please check out the city's website. And if you just Google City of Racine boards and commissions, you'll get right to it. And our democracy works when our people participate. So we want to encourage people to apply.
And the current round is through, you have to apply through April 11th. That's when you have to apply. Which, what's that, Friday?
Yes.
Okay, Friday. I was looking at the list here. You don't need disc jockeys for anything, so that's...
Not specifically, okay. But a disc jockey could apply.
And get turned down. Everybody could apply.
That's right.
Get turned down. So what else? Am I missing here? Anything this morning you want to bring up?
No, I mean, I think those are the big things. I mean, it's a new council that'll get sworn in on the 15th, so we look forward to that. And that's when the committee appointments are also made. So we're looking forward to all of that.
Now you got
to
work with new people now.
Yeah, yeah.
Just when you thought you had everybody figured out, you got to refigure everybody.
That's democracy, right? I mean, you never know what you're going to get. Every year, half the council is up for election. And so, you know, as many as half could come back or as many as half could be replaced.
Now, next election, we're going to do the even numbers.
Correct.
See, everybody, and I didn't know this until I looked at it. I said, these are all odd numbers on here.
Right.
All the odd districts, and now it's going to be even districts.
Yeah, the odd number districts are up in the odd numbered years, and the even numbered districts are up in the even numbered years.
Is the council similar to what we have in the Congress, where you got the Democrats just voting everything down the Republicans want, the Republicans putting everything down the Democrats? Do you run into that kind of stuff in the council?
Sometimes, yes, but for the most part, it's still very, like, you know, do you want this development in your district or not, right? Do you want the buses to run on time or not? So one of the things that you hope to see more of is just making decision-making at the local level. It's really where government touches people most directly, right? And so people just want things to work. And so there's a pragmatism that comes into place that you would hope would override some of those partisan instincts that people might have.
I'd last 9 seconds in your job. I'd tell them, shut up and sit down, and that would be the end of me. You got to have a certain kind of discipline.
Yeah.
Because I would get so annoyed with people when I hear them doing stupid things, and I'd yell at them, and that would be the end of my job.
Well, you know, I mean, look, everybody has a right to their opinion and to express their opinion and to be heard. I might be thinking on the inside, well, that's not the way I would have put it, but, you know, everyone has an ability to express their opinion. We hope at the local level that the interaction is civil and respectful. Sometimes it goes a little off the rails, but for the most part, you got to give up space for people to have their say. And it's not whether or not I agree with everything that people have to say. It's whether or not they had some space to be heard. And that's where local democracy is still, I think, the closest to the people and the most effective.
You know what the best part is? We could bring the mayor in here.
That's right.
Talk to him every month.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, a lot of people don't want to talk on the radio because they're afraid of questions.
Well, I'm
glad to say you're not afraid of
them. Yeah, no, not at all.
That's good. His Honor, Mayor Corey Mason is here, the mayor of the city of Racine. And if you missed this and you say, I wanted to hear what he said earlier, we'll have a podcast this week forever.
That's right. So,
that's why you got to be careful what you say. Everything in this world now is forever.
It is.
Any photograph, anything you say is forever. But this was a great broadcast today.
Happy Monday, everyone.
Yeah, thank you very much. Mayor Corey Mason, the city of Racine.